Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
The wealth and time from KER Politics. Lost a couple of world leaders here, one to death and one to a resignation. I'm going to talk about both of these people because they were making a difference in Big Al's opinion in the world. One was Shinto Abe, who was shot, although it's not known as of this moment in time. We're recording fairly early on Friday moment. He may have died from a heart attack, but it would appear that he died from the bullet of an assailant who had a homemade gun. Jimmy, would you elaborate on this one?
Sure. Shinzo Abe has been, he was prime minister for many years, through the late 2000s to a little while ago, gave up. His party still is in charge of Japan. He's a conservative, he's a nationalist, and he's very concerned about China. And of course, no one knows the details at this point, but there was a man, a 41-year-old man, who apparently served in the Maritime Defense Forces, so basically the Japanese Navy,
yep.
From, I believe, 2004, 2006, something along those lines. And he had made a homemade shotgun. Now, this is in a country that has some of the strictest anti-gun laws in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he made this homemade shotgun. Shot Abe while he was speaking in their town, and both of them live in the same town. And of course, Abe's latest campaigns have not been for himself, but for the sovereignty of China and the sovereignty of Taiwan. He's a very staunch supporter of an independent Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to wonder, and this is a very important question, were there some other circumstances involved? Because the Chinese, mainland Chinese, are absolutely excited about this very powerful world leader, politician, former prime minister that was shot and died either from the gunshot wound or from heart attack because of the gunshot wound. We don't know the details on that, but it's fairly irrelevant at this point. We've got to wonder if this is a signal that will change dynamics around the world.
Now let me ask you this: why? And you know, on the one hand, you can say we just had a crazy guy, and on the other hand, you can say, well, the ramifications are really, really serious. Tell me why, in your opinion, Jim, the ramifications are not just that this is a crazy guy who made himself a homemade shotgun, tell me why it was a harbinger, perhaps, of some very grievous things to come, in your opinion.
Sure. Well, first of all, we don't know the details
of
what motivated this guy. So there could have been something else involved. He may have been a very liberal guy. He could have been a strong nationalist. For whatever reason, we don't know the details, and we don't know what was behind it in either making this weapon. So, you know, that has to be investigated, and there has to be a deeper look. The ramifications, the global ramifications, are the potential of a backlash from the Japanese for a prime minister being shot, the one that was very pro-Taiwan, and of course the opportunity for the Chinese, mainland Chinese, the Chinese Communist Party, to take advantage of confusion, political confusion and desperation inside Japan right now. This could bring a very big political and diplomatic problem, as we are already seeing a significant problem with Taiwan as the Chinese mainland and the CCP aggressively test the world on their support for an independent, sovereign Taiwan. And what I can see is the stage being set for more drama, more accusations from both sides that create instability in the region. It's not like there isn't quite a bit right now. I mean, the Chinese Communist Party is signaling on a daily basis their intentions with Taiwan, as they did with Hong Kong, and no one really stood up to stop the overtaking of the democratic processes within Taiwan, and it's been controlled by mainland China now without very little pressure from the outside world. And this, of course, ties in very carefully with what's happening in the UK with Boris Johnson's resignation. And
now I want to get you to explain that to me a little bit. I read about Johnson yesterday while I continue to fight the COVID and get my test down to negative, which I'm very happy is where it is and has been since last night. Boy, is that a load off of my shoulders. But let me say this. What does Boris Johnson have to do with the situation in Taiwan, in your opinion, Jimmy?
So you have to look at a global perspective, and here are two staunch nationalists. Boris Johnson, he's the one that led UK through Brexit,
right.
Very anti-Russian, very strongly supporting Ukraine and understands what's happening there, and is one of the key partners in the United States around the world, and of course in conjunction with Japan and Australia for Pacific concerns. And so with Boris Johnson being forced out, we really don't know, and we may never know the complex politics that were behind that within his Conservative Party. But here you've got some turmoil from both of these areas that may provide the Chinese communist leadership, that very small group of people, to think they have an opportunity to take advantage of instability and inability of decision makers and leadership around the world, and especially in those countries that are pro-Taiwan and anti-authoritarian.
Well, I know that Johnson was a very, very much of a strong nationalist in the sense that he was one of the first world leaders who actually visited Ukraine, and I think really made a great showing for the UK. Having said that, I find your intuition here to be very, very interesting in that I would bet that most people never thought that there was any relationship whatsoever between a dependent Taiwan and a Taiwan that was actually part of mainland China. I believe that most people did not draw a parallel there between Boris Johnson's I don't want to say removal, because he was definitely not removed. Let's say his resignation, for lack of better terms. You feel very strongly that that possibly had to do with Johnson's nationalistic views on Jimmy?
Well, I'm not sure exactly why he was pressured out. I mean, there's a lot of, I could go into very complex details of some of the mistakes he made supporting the wrong type of people in his cabinet, how he dealt with COVID for a period of time. Those are all internal political issues, but somebody took advantage and said, okay, this is enough, and they had to step away, and it's not clear why. And there may be financial influences involved here, there may be Chinese influences involved here that are pressuring even conservative financial leaders around the world. But here's the third piece of this triangle in the next 20 seconds. We have a turnover in UK government, and there's no direction coming. You've got a problem in Japan, and you have an absolutely incompetent, incapable leadership in the United States. Those are the three key players in the world that creep stability. We are in a very, very challenging time right now. Stability for the Western world. And many people are going to scream and yell about the mistakes the United States has made in causing problems. And there's no question we have, certainly, walking away from Afghanistan, what we did in Iraq in 2012, many, many problems. But this is a very difficult position and situation for the world, with many other problems we can discuss later on in the show.
Okay. Jimmy, we got to take a time for the top of the hour news, take a break for that, and then Jimmy and I will be back to handle the last hour of KER Politics. Great intuition on your part, James. Thank you so much.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing on with KER Politics, Dr. Fried is going to do what, in my opinion, is one of the more important psychological profiles of two really cool political leaders. Now, the reason I say that is I believe that come November of 24, it's going to be a showdown in the Republican Party between, I would have to say, Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, for the nomination of the President of the United States. I think both of them are very highly qualified with his personality, with all the work that he has done and the party has done in the past to further the cause of Ron DeSantis. I think that would be a very interesting primary race here. Doc, tell us about what you came up with in terms of the psychological differences between these two viable candidates.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Al. It's interesting because their political profile does become similar at certain times. People that are interested in one or the other are not always the same, and that's the similarities and the dissimilarities of each of them. But, you know, nothing ever seems to bring Trump down. So even if his image looks damaged, Republicans who want a political future still won't cross him. So this is about the political profile of each of these candidates. And the ex-president's outrageous behavior and willingness to torch institutions is actually central, believe it or not, to his appeal. And Republican voters want to have their grievances and biases reinforced, and politicians who give that to them are going to be rewarded. So, you know, Ron DeSantis, he's the governor of Florida, and is discussing issues such as transgender rights, doing away with COVID-19 protocols, and keeping gender ID away from school, which is interesting. This is a very topical discussion right now. So DeSantis or Trump, one of these candidates can really shape the message of the future with their political profiles. But, you know, Trump overturning the constitutional right to an abortion and loosening gun law directly highlights his legacy instead of complaining about voter fraud. That's where we should really focus. A recent poll showed that DeSantis gaining ground among GOP voters in the first primary in the nation in New Hampshire Trump has a magnetism and a bond with his voters that DeSantis does not have. So, you know, DeSantis is going around saying, don't say gay, this law with the anti-LGBTQ law officially in. And teachers are scared to wear rainbows and have pictures of their same-sex spouses. And in some cases, have to notify parents about the determination of an open LGBTQ student in class. So DeSantis bans any talk of gender ID and sexual orientation in kindergarten through third grade and prohibits such discussions through high school. And parents are even asking for their children to be assigned different rooms and different accommodations if these kids are not comfortable to be mainstreamed with the other kids. So both Trump and DeSantis have the same agenda, but DeSantis is more controlled, and Trump has his committed followers. So, you know, one or the other, you're right, Al, these two are runners-up, and one of them is going to get in. Because Biden is actually, he has a 60% disapproval rate. But, you know, he's centering on the January 6th insurgents, and that's what he's trying to do to pull away from the fact that he's below 40% of his approval, and the Republican nominee has a strong chance of victory. And even the suburban voters who turned away from Trump are hurting. And even if an alternative Republican might be a better place to win them back than any kind of Democratic government. So what I'd like to talk to you about a little bit is the gender fluid situation, was so controversial now with sexual orientation, and is this normal? You know, research has shown that children from the age of 3 up to the end of being teenagers have not really formulated their gender ID yet. So this is important to know, that just because a boy may put on nail polish or girl's clothing, doesn't mean that's going to be his sexual orientation. Or a girl who's a tomboy doesn't mean that that's the direction she'll go into adulthood. So we can't really create this kind of stigma when children are actually formulating who they are and getting them into a place where they're stuck and thinking, hey, maybe they're right. Maybe this is my gender ID. Not necessarily so. We need to have young people grow up like they have in the past, formulate where they are in their lives, and know that they could have it harder if they feel that they fit into a certain category that somebody else thinks that they should be in. Do you have any comments on that, Al?
You know, actually, I do. I think it's amazing. I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm realizing, Frieda, how important this whole thing has become, in the sense that it's really kind of ridiculous. We have one of the most important presidential elections of my lifetime coming up here in October of 24, and the real question isn't necessarily world economic policy. It's not necessarily what's going on in Eastern Europe, but it has to do with gender identification, for lack of better terms. It's not that I disagree with the statement, but I have to say I would sure like to see us focus on this particular election, not necessarily on gender awareness, but I think primarily on who would be the best person to be the president. And you have very effectively brought out that we may not even be able to see that issue because of what the Democrats are doing. Frieda, I'm serious. We've only got 1 minute, but I'd like you to wrap this up. We only have 1 minute.
It's very scary that children have to be identified before they're ready. And the fact that the Democrats are doing so poorly, we have no choice but to vote for one of these nominees. And we can only do better. And the things that they're doing make a lot of sense. We need to be able to protect our future in such a way that people are able to re-identify what it is that is important to them. And it's not about anything else, but about our lifestyles that we're leading today. You're absolutely right. This is what it comes down to. Being able to make the right choices that are healthy for ourselves and our children and our future. That's where we need to go. We don't need any double talk from Biden telling us.
And that's where we are going to go. Dr. Birnbaum, appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, back with KER Politics. Top of the hour news is come and gone, at least for this Saturday. This Friday, as we are recording on the July 8th. Jimmy, I think the biggest news item that we have to talk about right now is strategic oil reserves that were sold by Biden to a Chinese entity. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me. I know I watched the coverage of it last night on Fox, and Dr. Laura was beside herself. Nobody on Fox understood why the president would sell part of our strategic reserves to an entity controlled by mainland China. What's going on, Bud, in your opinion?
Yeah, so in March, the guy that sits up there that's supposed to be in charge right now, Joe Biden, announced that he was going to release a million barrels a day for 180 days, equaling 180 million barrels of the national strategic reserve in order to reduce pressure on gas prices. And of course, it didn't work. He released that the contracts went in place. They started pumping from these reserve locations, and the price didn't go down. And a lot of people were trying to figure out what the heck's going on, because this was supposed to be a little bit of a relief.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is, it turns out that a large percentage of the overall reserves released, possibly 45 million barrels, have been sold overseas. And including in those sales, there have been sales to India and China. And China, of course, and India both are buying oil from Russia. Course, the Biden administration's argument is the reason why prices are so high are because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Putin's oil price hike, or Putin's tax, they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
But it appears that the administration is actually facilitating that. And of course, the Russians are making a fortune as the prices of oil continue to be so high, and the sanctions have failed miserably to have any effect on the Russian economy. So basically, you've got an administration, Secretary of Energy, that has allowed these contract sales to Europe and to Asia, undermining the ability to actually reduce the amount of oil in our, reduce the price, the amount, you know, put more oil into the system to reduce prices.
Right.
And, you know, keeping this up, but more importantly, they're actually like draining off all our reserves at a critical time when the world is in very unstable situation.
It's almost like a movie, Jimmy.
This is worse than a movie. This is absolutely unbelievably criminal in my view, and absolutely against the fundamental principles that the government is supposed to be taking care of Americans. We're spending, $40-45 billion on the Ukrainian government to fight against the Russians. And look, I understand. I don't believe the Russians are doing anything good here. There's nothing good here. But boy, the continued bad decisions from this administration make it appear that they are actively doing things to undermine U.S. national security. We're down to a very small reserve. Some people are estimating 60, 90 days when they complete this 180 million barrel sale. The lowest reserves we've had, apparently, for at least decades, and since like 1970s. That is an incredibly dangerous position to be in, as we're facing more challenges.
Why in the hell would the federal government allow the president to do something asinine like this? I don't understand it.
So here's my thought of what's happening. I think, again, we've talked about this a little bit before on the show. I think there are vying powers inside the White House that are trying to gain leverage and to achieve their goals as rapidly as possible. I think the wokesters, the racial division people, that's one group. The social justice people, that's one group. The corporate interests are another group. And most importantly, the climate gurus, the climate Nazis, have control. And I think they are trying to push America off of fossil fuels at whatever cost necessary.
This cost is too high, Jim.
No, I agree, Al, and I think and I think most Americans do too. But they continue to double down on it. And of course, the White House spokesperson Corinne Jean-Pierre, the absolutely incompetent paid liar up there, said something yesterday that we are in the best we have the best economy in U.S. history. How can they publicly make these statements with fuel prices so high, with inflation skyrocketing, with farmers running out of fuel for transportation of their goods, with their inability to run their tractors, can't afford to do it, fertilizer shortages, border insurrection across the entire nation. These people are just absolutely undermining security in this nation. And many people don't even know it. They don't even see it because our media continues to protect a corrupt regime.
I got to tell you, that's more than a That's a very, very, very terrible thing to do to my country. I don't understand it. I saw some of the Pennsylvanian farmers who were interviewed last night on television. They have not a clue as to why they can't get enough fuel for their tractors. And yet we are selling our strategic fuel reserves to an entity controlled by mainland China. I wonder how much money Hunter Biden and his dad are making off of this one, Jim.
Well, you know what? That's a very good question, and it's something that needs to be looked into very deeply. More importantly, who's influencing the decision-making processes inside the White House that continually support Chinese and international objectives and undermine U.S. National security and the people here? What happened? How come they forgot about their role to protect America and Americans for their livelihood and their future? And this is consistent with an Obama policy that they wanted to bring the United States down a notch. And of course, most of the people inside the staff of this White House are former Obamites, and they're following the same policies that were undermining the U.S. then, but they're doing it in a very aggressive manner. And you have these, you know, absolutely comical statements by people like John Kerry, the climate czar, the Secretary of Energy, that just absolutely do not understand, either don't understand, or what I'm afraid of is they're actively undermining this nation and knowingly doing it in order to achieve their political ends.
You know, Jimmy, I got to tell you, I'm a pretty smart guy, and I don't understand this situation at all. All I can say is that it really would appear at this point in time that the powers that be, not necessarily the House and the Senate, but in this space, the executive office is very definitely doing everything it possibly can to knock down the United States. Now, we got a bit of a problem with the clock here, Jim.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, but I just want to, let me just finish this up with another 30 seconds here. What I believe is happening, it's a strategy just to push as much as they possibly can in their agenda and achieve the progressive as much as they can, and then hopefully some of it sticks. I don't think it's going to work.
I don't get it. This is like a civil war, Jimmy, only it's like a civil war where my family and your family are really, really going to suffer. I don't understand why this is going on. I have absolutely no clue as to why the Senate and Congress is going along with this. I have absolutely no reason to know why Biden is doing this other than the obvious. Okay, here to wrap up KE Report, KER Politics. Going to talk with Jimmy about many, many of the things that are really troublesome today to society, not the least of which is the overpayment that has been recently discovered in the unemployment benefits. James McKinney, you're on, sir.
Yeah, so it turns out that the Inspector General for the Department of Labor did a review. They're required annually to check on how many payments were made and how many were legitimate. But apparently their latest report for 2021 COVID year, clearly while the Biden administration continued to force people out of work, there were $77 billion of improper unemployment payment, insurance payments, last year. That equals 18.71% of the total unemployment insurance payments in the system for that year. Now, this is the same year that the Biden administration started pushing vaccinations, telling federal employees they could not stay employed if they didn't get vaccinated. They were forcing people out of the workforce at a very, very heavy pressure through corporate entities and through their, you know, basically pressuring businesses to put people out for not vaccinated. And of course, people were taking unemployment. And it turns out that we have a massive $77 billion. That's a huge amount of money that was improperly giving through this crisis that they created themselves, in my view.
How can they possibly make mistakes that big, Jimmy? I mean, right now it's one thing after another. I don't get it. No, we're going to have to start again. Let me just pick this up. Jimmy, how can they really make mistakes like that right now? I don't get it. It's one
thing. It's interesting when you look back. So during the Trump administration, there was when they came into office, there was about a 10 to 12% overage, you know, improper payments made. But each year he was reducing that amount until 2021. And this amount is just surpasses unbelievably, you know, doubles the amount of bad payments in the past. And it shows corruption. It shows lack of checking anything. It shows an administration that was unwilling to enforce rules or, you know, basically to ignore, the needs of the, you know, legitimate needs of the people and then provide to anybody that put in requests. And I think it's really, really unfortunate as we lose more and more faith in our government's ability to manage federal government at the large level.
You know, the question that I have about that is, how did all of this happen in such a short period of time? I hate to say it, but it all happened really, in my opinion. Here I am answering the question that I just asked, but I don't mean to do that. But it strikes me that probably the most incompetent president of the United States that we have ever had is the reason that all of these mistakes are taking place like right now.
Yeah, we do have, I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of unprofessional leadership across the board in this administration. When you look at Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, taking months off for paid paternity leave and really having no clue what was going on. He completely distanced himself from his job when we were beginning the process of, you know, some of these transportation and distribution problems. I mean, and he just took the time off. This is incredible. You've got the Secretary of Energy basically pushing green agenda in spite of an energy crisis. You've got, you know, the Department of Defense pushing, they're losing soldiers and forcing people out because of vaccination requirements for a population that is not affected by COVID at all. They're, you know, in every aspect of governance right now, we are seeing failure by this administration. And I think it's just because I don't know if they were legitimate from the beginning. I actually questioned their legitimacy from the beginning.
You questioned what legitimacy, Jim?
Well, I mean, when you look back at the election in 2020, in November 2020, and you see all the potential corruption that was involved in that, with the mail-in ballots, with the COVID lockdowns, with the closing down counts at midnight, with the absolute clear amount of fraud that was involved with mail-in ballots and the number of people that were actually delivering ballots, the Zuck Bucks, the $419 million poured into local and state authorities to actually for nonprofits to manage in key districts some of the election activities there. You got to question whether or not this was a fraudulent. To me, it appears very clearly there's a tremendous amount of information to show people should question whether or not this is a fraudulent election and this administration is even legitimate. And when you look at the responses and the failures by the Biden administration in Afghanistan, when you look at the border policy, which is forcing many, many states to take these massive refugee, migrant, illegal immigrant inflows and the costs associated with it. You have to realize there's a lot of things that are going on here that are directly against the fundamental principles of our laws, our Constitution, and the rights of the individual American citizens.
There's a lot of stuff that makes absolutely no sense right now. Boy, I feel like my voice is going. I didn't realize that COVID would be affecting my voice. But anyway, I am testing negative, so it ain't COVID no more, as they say.
Well, that's good. And glad you're back.
Oh, boy. I don't know that I'm totally back, but I sure feel better. Thanks, Jim. None of you out there, CFS, Irish Tony, Jerry, none of you want to get this. It's no fun, to say the least. You know, I have never seen things go on in the United States in such a derogatory manner as I have seen this past week. Lord knows I've had the time to really go over events that are going on. I've watched Fox every single night. I'm in love with Dr. Laura, etc., etc. I think Fox is absolutely the only channel that's carrying even a semblance of what's going on as being correct news, but we don't need to talk about that. What we need to talk about is what are we going to do to change things. Jimmy and I were talking about this with you guys before I got COVID, and it all boils down to one thing. We have to go to the polls in November of 24, no matter what the Democrats do. We cannot let them maintain even a gauche of power. They are doing such a terrible job right now. They cannot continue. Our country has already slipped a couple of notches, in my opinion. Look what's going on in the scope of power between the United States, Russia, and China. It's really, really abysmal right now, Jim. We have to stop it. And we have to stop it in a peaceful manner at the ballot box. We do not have a choice. We cannot let things slip any more than they have so far, Jimmy.
Yeah, we actually can't wait till 2024. We've got to get it done in November 2022. We've got to have success of getting people that care about this nation first. And I'm not talking Republicans or Democrats. I'm talking about just people that want to protect the basic foundations of our Constitution, okay, and the principles that have made this nation at once was the leader of the world and is now failing rapidly.
It's failing more than rapidly. It's failing precipitously. On our new time clock, Jim, we've got a minute left.
Yeah, so I just think that, your point about getting involved right now, all indicators show that the Democrats are in very serious trouble. When CNN is putting out issues and saying, hey, look, you know, they're in trouble. Yeah. When MSNBC is accepting that reality, we know that there's a potential for a big change. But the problem is we really have to trust the system, which means being very vigilant and questioning what's happening out there. Thankfully, Wisconsin's dropping mail-in ballot boxes. A lot of states have tightened the rules back up. And let's hope and pray that we get back to a legitimate system where we can trust it.
I happen to agree 1,000%. It's been an interesting show, Jim. Thanks so much. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been difficult for me to put this up, going through the very final messages of COVID. Hope you enjoyed it.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.